Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with David Faber, Mike Santoli at the New York Stock Exchange. Kramer has the morning off. We're coming off three S&P weekly gains. Record Dow close on Friday. Futures pretty steady as we brace for the real surge of earnings. 150 S&P names this week, along with GDP, core PCE. Oil hits 85 this morning. Our roadmap begins with the big week for tech. Facebook, Alphabet, Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, among those set to report, as well as a third of the Dow stocks all this week.
Plus, we do have Facebook fallout continuing. Documents revealing internal fury and dissent over the social media network's policies. But so far, a muted impact for the stock.
And PayPal pops while Pinterest shares plunge. The payments giant says it is not looking to buy the social media platform, at least not right now.
Start off with a discussion of where we are in earnings season so far. We're about maybe 25% of the way through the season. And despite some of the hand-wringing going in to the overall season, got 79% beating on earnings on the top line, 72 top line, 79 on the bottom line, by probably a bigger margin than we expected.
Yes.
Ahead of the first prints.
Bigger than expected, not as great as the prior few quarters, which is probably a record margin of outperformance. So good enough, certainly, to keep the market moving in the right direction. Potholes definitely along the way. Interesting, you know, Snap, IBM. You can name the ones that really left a mark, but it was not necessarily something that had a lot of, kind of aftershocks to the rest of the market. For now, I think everyone's on board with the idea that good enough earnings this time. We'll see if the estimates come up enough for next year to really keep the chain's moving. I think that's the big question. And everyone's on board with the idea that, you know, we're in the sweet spot for the calendar for stocks. Are too many people already positioned that way? That's going to be the question as we made this, you know, round trip, marginal new highs in the S&P.
Right. Is tech still the most vulnerable part of the market?
I guess you could say, I don't know, tech broadly speaking, because I do think you've already had people on guard right now. Right? We after Snap, I mean, Facebook and everything going on there, you wonder if, in fact, there's room for upside surprise. Amazon shares have been awful on a relative basis. And so I don't think that there's a lot of pent-up high expectations in them. To me, it seems like the supply chain leverage stuff is more vulnerable. But again, we're kind of already feeling for it. Kimberly Clark, right? Another one of these consumer staples companies can't quite manage to protect margins to 100% that they'd like to, but a small decline in the stock, not necessarily a big hit.
We do have an awful lot of market cap reporting earnings this week. I mean, this is the big one with Apple, Facebook, Alphabet, Amazon, and Microsoft all coming. Of course, Facebook after the close. We'll see what the iOS change from Apple has meant for Facebook. Of course, we referenced Snap's price the other day. That also plays in, and we'll talk a bit more about that momentarily, into Pinterest perhaps as well in terms of their future earnings. But, you know, Mike, I remember that last quarter because it was so stunning in terms of the top line numbers at so many of these companies, Alexa, which frankly we'd rarely, if ever, seen, at least in companies that have been around as long as these have. It's not going to repeat. And yet there was, I wouldn't say a muted response, but it wasn't as though the stocks went parabolic after those incredible numbers.
Not at all. No, earnings season itself was not really when the market made the most progress. I think there's always a little bit of, of kind of push-pull under the surface. The top-line growth, it's kind of amazing. I mean, you know, even though the third quarter GDP may have been, by the Atlanta Fed estimate, you know, close to zero, other estimates are much higher. We've been running at a 10% nominal growth economy at parts of this year, and that's not something that, you know, analysts have ever really modeled in their careers. And so we're still in that mode where there's just enough to go around. I think it's also why the market in general has been able to deal with the fact that inflation expectations have gotten some lift. And, you know, if you look at the bond market where 5- and 10-year inflation looks like it is, it's because growth is coming through. And it's not sort of choking off the growth story. It's accompanying the growth story.
Yeah. And to your point about the market sort of handling the issue of supply chain pressure, Goldman last night, David Kostin in the last 2 weeks, both consumer goods and stocks with China supply chains have outperformed the S&P. He also points to some of the China shipping rates coming off of the September highs, as he puts it, tentative signs of improvement, which is certainly what we should hope for.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're, arguably, we're getting a little bit past when, like, if anything was going to be coming for holiday, it should be there already. I think the big question, though, is spending just going to be shifting over to services? That's why everyone's watching the travel booking numbers and, you know, the restaurant reservation stuff. This idea that, you know, 2022 is going to be much more go do stuff, don't go buy stuff. And that in itself should relieve some of the pressure.
Yeah, I think it was Pantheon Macro last night as well said, look, if you get the shift back into services from goods, we're overspending on goods, and you get some capacity increases as companies invest maybe a bit, I mean, could you be looking at outright price declines in the middle of next year?
Yeah.
Certainly, that's Yellen's view from what she said over the weekend.
That's a version of it, absolutely. And, you know, that would absolutely be a surprise relative to consensus right now. It also is the formula for ongoing productivity gains, which is also your kind of good news offset, in theory, longer term, to this inflationary mini-crisis we have right now.
Definitely not Jack Dorsey's view, though.
That's right.
Apparently. Although, guys, you know, Intel, I mean, you mentioned Snap. Intel also, that's worth mentioning. That was a nasty quarter.
Absolutely.
Or at least and or guidance.
And yet the rest of the semi group didn't suffer. So it is being viewed as a little bit of a one-off. I mean, IBM was nasty, but that's not directly relevant to a lot of the rest of the industry. And so, look, we as you said, we have a tremendous amount, 30% of the market cap or whatever the S&P of reporting this week. You theoretically could have a critical mass of big misses that, you know, that actually causes an excuse for a broader pullback. I just haven't seen it yet.
Meanwhile, you saw Dorsey there. I don't know what he's seeing, Carl.
Well,
sure what inputs he's dealing with that made him feel as though I need to tweet about hyperinflation.
Well, maybe it's the percentage of his wealth that he personally has invested in crypto. That'd be one thing. I think you got to look at Cathie Wood's rebuttal. She responds with a long thread of her own, talking about how the velocity of money has not taken off. The costs of innovation like AI are plummeting. And her overall view that you got a lot of companies that underinvested over the years. They're going to be selling, in her words, obsolete products over time for less money, i.e. deflation.
Yes, that has been Cathie's view for quite some time. As a matter of fact, when the prevailing fear was deflation, she was also out there saying, no, it's deflation, but only because it's a technology step function revolution and happened in the late 19th century. And she's kind of She basically goes back to the same dynamics all around, which is that the transformation of the economy through these kind of innovative things are kind of inherently deflationary and yet also, you know, create more value down the road. So that's obviously the big upbeat mega bull case for how the economy can kind of revive itself. We'll see if it, you know, it doesn't feel that way in the process. It's a pretty tough transition sometimes.
Yeah. Well, she's not even pointing to demography and population growth and workforce growth, which that's a global picture that is not an inflationary thesis.
And also fun that, you know, part of that thesis, Tesla has always fit into that story of kind of deflationary transformation, innovation, and yet they're raising prices today. So they will if they can, you know, and then obviously they don't have a demand problem.
I mean, Dorsey doesn't have to worry. He's worth, what, $14 billion at least, much of it in Square, don't forget. And we talk so often about Twitter, but really Square is where so much value has been created given the performance of that stock price over time. He follows his own path, so I have no idea where Jack is, what exactly it is he's seeing or buying that perhaps has put him in mind that hyperinflation
is here. Of people look at those charts of the money supply and the fact that it's gone vertical because of what the Fed has been doing, and they think that that means inflation. Or they think that that means there's, you know, 50% of all dollars have been created in the last whatever couple of years. Whatever those stories are, it just doesn't matter for prices, really, unless it matters. You know, it's not like it's making its way into people buying stuff off the store shelves.
Right. So we're going to watch it, obviously, a long-standing debate we're having with about inflation. Meantime, Facebook's going to be the story. They report tonight under fire, making headlines today regarding some more leaked internal documents. Reports say they indicate that employees of the social network expressed anger about Facebook's policies on handling misinformation, including when it came to 2020 and the election and January 6th. There's separate stashes of documents that have been looked at by Bloomberg today, a March internal document that found that they're losing engagement, not just with millennials, but with Gen X.
Right.
Which is going to be the story tonight. What happens with engagement?
Exactly. What happens with engagement? What happens with ad measurement and targeting and all the other things that are happening, you know, in the industry and in their direct market that are not about, you know, policing content and you know, the impact of its of that content on people. So it is rough. I mean, it's amazing because the stock had this incredible run where a lot of these issues were also front and center up into a month or two ago. And it was mostly because people said, well, the value, I mean, it just can't help but just spit out all this the huge margin profits and everything else. And now it's at this interesting discount, trading at a discount to the S&P 500, probably its widest valuation spread ever to Google, you know, with obviously Alphabet being the more highly valued one. So it, you wonder what's already built in here, because sometimes even though they ramp up their costs to deal with all these issues.
Right.
Sometimes you just look at it and say, well, look at their revenue per user and look at it. Just
listen,
can't stop,
I mean, Mike, every you know, when you talk dollars and cents, so to speak, or PE, everybody comes back to the same basic theme, which is this stock, given the company's growth rate, both top and bottom line, is inexpensive, period. And that will be their justification for potentially purchasing it. But any real hit to that, I guess, would be the key question here, as opposed to all the other things that what we'll be focused on. How bad is the impact from the iOS change in terms of their ability to monetize?
Yeah. And, you know, anything that looks like structurally a change to the profit setup.
Right.
You know, where it's just not really getting as much traction. That probably
they do trot out that we spend $13 billion and 40,000 people. Yeah. They've done that a number of times. Nick Clegg has done that on all the talk shows in the morning. I guess they have another statement out to that effect as well in terms.
And that's
of
something that, you know, I feel like for years you've been able to point out and say, this is a company that really wants to convey how much it's spending and almost wants to obscure how effortlessly profitable it is. And it doesn't really have incentives to point out just how great the business is. You wonder if that matters, because sometimes it's just been that good and it hasn't, you know, impacted investors' view of it. You know, but right now, I mean, clearly their list of priorities doesn't start with, you know, maximize quarterly profits.
Right. Well, we're going to find out whether or not a priority is marketing and a name change.
Yeah.
Certainly, they've been more aggressive about getting in front of reports with that thread about upcoming journalistic efforts on Friday. You mentioned Google, by the way. Morgan Stanley removes it from the fresh money list after the Snap guidance. They say while some of this might have been specific to Snap's business model, Google's been a top performer, leaving less relative upside.
Right, and that's a fair point. I mean, it has been by far the best performer of the mega cap tech group. People feel like it's insulated from a lot of the specific issues there. But, you know, it's hardly a real indictment of the stock or the business. It's just saying, you know, the market gets it at this point. And I think that's, you know, it's a fair point. You also could make that point probably about Microsoft. That's also been the case for a very long time, that it looks rich, but it has for a while, and it keeps executing well and substantiating that premium.
Yeah. Both JPM and Cowen Evercore reiterate Microsoft outperformed today, even in the face of this blog post from Microsoft about having to warn more companies about Russian agencies trying to hack. They did say that some of the efforts from the White House are having some meaningful impact on managing these events, but we're not going to stop having them by any means.
No, it's a new pace, apparently, of attacks. Many of them fairly unsophisticated, sort of trying to steal passwords and or phishing. Not necessarily the highest level of sophistication, but a torrent of it. And, of course, putting into mind the SolarWinds hack, which did have serious ramifications for a lot of different companies.
Yeah.
We'll take a break here. Future's pretty steady as we get ready for, as we said, not just a lot of earnings, Microsoft, Boeing, Caterpillar, Apple, GM this week, but a lot of macro data. All the major averages, though, are higher for the month. S&P still on pace for the best month since November of last year. We're back after a break.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Keep an eye on shares of Pinterest and PayPal this morning. You can see moving in opposite directions. Pinterest down as much as 14%, perhaps, when we get started with trading about 13 minutes from now. PayPal saying, you know what? In response to market rumors regarding a potential acquisition of Pinterest by PayPal, we're not pursuing an acquisition of Pinterest at this time. Pretty simple statement. Of course, there were numerous press reports last week indicating that the two companies were fairly close to a potential deal. Under which PayPal would pay as much as $70 a share, all in stock, to acquire Pinterest. PayPal stock price did suffer after those reports first came out, kind of day after day. And then also you had that news from Snap on Friday. Now, listen, if they were as far along as reports indicated, you would expect that PayPal perhaps would have had a sense as to Pinterest's future earnings, or at least current quarter. And that may have even been one reason why Pinterest was motivated to enter into talks to begin with. That said, what we saw from Snap, what PayPal was seeing from its own shareholder base in terms of its response to these reports, Mike, may have motivated them to back off for now. Listen, I didn't report anything. By the way, for you reporters, other younger reporters out there, given I've been doing M&A reporting forever, it's no fun, man. It's hard. Even when you're right, you can end up being wrong, and everybody hates you because you got everybody in the stock. And by the way, now it's working. If you were an ARB, you were long Pinterest and short PayPal. Today is a painful day for you.
It is, for sure. What is interesting to me, though, is that PayPal was at 270 before the deal news came out, before the first reports. It's only going to bounce up into the low 250s today. It was $308 stock 3 months ago. So, aside from the merits or demerits of the deal as it was reported or anything else, there is now this sense out there that PayPal's searching for something, searching for the next thing, searching for some kind of traction in e-commerce, some other way to distinguish its payments platforms. And so that's an interesting part of the story from here on out.
Pins is going to open, below its Thursday open of 53. Yep. We're now at 49. Maybe some of that's the Snap effect rubbing off. But when we had the Microsoft dalliance reported back in March, and now this, I mean, to say they're being left at the altar repeatedly might be a stretch.
Yes.
But it does make you wonder about what's going on with Pins and their model.
It does. And in part, their willingness to even consider engaging, given the belief that they're a high growth company. Typically, that's not behavior you would expect from a company that's putting up serious growth numbers on the top line. We'll know, I think, the reporting on the 4th of November is what I've got down here. So we should know fairly soon. But based, of course, on what we heard from Snap, we'll see what we get from Facebook. They are certainly lumped in, as you indicate, Carl, with that group. Again, PayPal probably had a sense for that in terms of any negotiations that had already taken place. Personally, I have not reported on this, so I'm only relying on others reporting.
Right. And, you know, I also do wonder, I mean, obviously it would impact everybody with iOS changes, but if Pinterest would really be on the front lines of how that's going to be most impacted, you're talking about the whole selling point of Pinterest as an asset was also people going there with intent to buy. And that's kind of part of the whole the social experience is kind of, you know, planning something or buying something down the road or renovating a house or whatever. So it is interesting. It's a huge pool of users. It's for under $40 billion. There's not a lot of those out there. If they indeed are a motivated seller, I don't know where they end up.
Yeah. We'll see if PayPal has more to say about it in the days to come. One more look here at futures as we are about 9 minutes ahead of the opening bell on this Monday morning and ahead of a very busy week. Don't go away.
Every day, thousands of Comcast engineers and technologists put people at the heart of everything they create, like Olu Sheyi, a Comcast engineer who grew up bonding with his dad over sports. This inspired him and his team to create AI Highlights technology that uses AI and machine learning to detect the major plays in a sporting event, so millions of fans have a way of catching up on their favorite sports. Learn more at ComcastCorporation.com.
7 minutes before the bell, taking a look at this morning's pre-market leaders heading into the start. We told you about PayPal, up about 6%. Tesla looking to make a new all-time high, up 4.4%, $9.50. Several upbeat news items on Tesla today. APA, Micron, and Occidental rounding out the top five. Opening bell, just minutes away.
Mike mentioned a couple of moments ago, Tesla looks to open at an all-time high today. It's already up about 8% in the last week, 40% in the last 3 months. You got two bits of news today. One is Morgan Stanley's Adam Jonas reiterates overweight, goes from 900 to 1,200 following their better-than-expected Q3 results. And then Hertz, a few months out of bankruptcy, said it's going to order 100,000 Teslas and develop its own charger network, and you'll be able to get a Model 3 at airports in major U.S. markets and across Europe.
And even another news item that was out that I guess that the Model 3 was the best-selling car in Europe last month, perhaps, or maybe year-to-date, best-selling model. So basically, it all kind of comes together as the stuff that Tesla bulls always expected would happen seems to be happening slightly more quickly than maybe we anticipated. The quarter that they reported was a good one, but not particularly surprising in terms of volumes. Good, you know, on the margin side. But now it's much more about the big picture, march to wherever it's going to go. It's already, you know, I think the fifth biggest market cap in the S&P, 2% of the index. It hit 900 in January. I think that's kind of something people forget. It had this huge run and then chopped around down below 700, 600 for a while. And on an incredible ramp here, yet again, you can talk valuation, yeah. You can talk whatever you want. It's just the news flow is working in the direction of the side of this market that's most energized, which is it's going to the moon side. And the options flows and all the other stuff that fits together with that.
Speaking of energized, there was one more piece of news this morning in the Journal about Panasonic, which says it's mostly solved the technology challenges with a larger lithium-ion battery that Musk has called the lower-cost way to power an electric car. You go longer on less, so yeah. There's even that, which would certainly be yet another potential positive.
Yeah, I think battery cost kind of coming down was obviously it's been a huge piece of the story, but actually was one of the elements people assume was why they were able to have better margins in the past quarter. So that trend too, you know. So, you know, as for Hertz, interesting little gambit. You want to try to distinguish yourself from the competition. But, you know, historically, fleet sales have been, you know, kind of a crutch for car makers. This doesn't seem to be in that quite in that category because they used to just kind of dump cars at a discount to make their volume numbers and keep the factories running back in the day, and often would come back to bite them.
Yeah,
that's not
right.
You don't have to bring it back full, though. Can you bring it back on, like,
a hardly I think there's charge? A question about the charge.
Like, how do you, like, make sure you charge, you know.
They're going to charge
you if you're undercharged?
Because that's time for them, right? They can't turn that car around right
It away. Doesn't take that long, does it? For it to, yeah, I don't know.
Well, Jonas points out that his new 1,200 target implies a growth rate of 28, which is about half the company's target. So for those who argue that Jonas is a little over his skis,
right.
He says, I'm baking in a lot of the supply chain troubles.
Sure. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, and also the way Tesla seems to be better positioned for those supply chain issues. So that's the idea, too. Market share can help.
Let's get the opening bell here and get things going, get this busy week underway. At the big board today, it's AT&T celebrating its 120th listing anniversary at the NASDAQ. Video rental and streaming service Redbox celebrating its listing via SPAC. We did have a couple of notes out today. KMB was one that Mike mentioned. 162 was a miss. Revenues up 4 was slightly ahead, but they do cut the guide. They now see 605 to 625 prior was 665 to 690 as these consumer products companies, it depends on who you talk to. Pepsi managing it somewhat better than it appears KMB is.
Yes, I think beverages is an area that has not been as impacted as much. And, you know, even Procter & Gamble, for pretty much they checked off all the boxes. They seem to execute very well. They're still not going to be able to completely stay free of the cost pressure. So it's been a tough group. I mean, Staples is really underperformed. And without little spurts in things like, you know, Walmart and Costco, as a sector, it has been under some pressure. But, you know, pretty much, I would say, low expectations already. I mean, KMB was down almost 10% from its highs as it was. So it's going to be a continuing story. I do think now the next phase is when are we clear of it? You have every, you know, big company in the world and all their logistics experts trying to sort it out. But the good news is consumers seem to be completely attuned to paying full price. Whether they like it or not, it's happened.
Yeah, no discounts this Christmas. And that's another sort of story as we head into the buying season there. Buy early and don't expect to see any bargains given the potential shortage of goods,
yeah.
And or at least there's not going to be a plethora.
It's going to be tough. Of course, oil is a huge input for companies like KMB, and we did mention Brent, 86 and change. WTI got to 85 for the first time since 2014. Goldman with a note out today saying that if you look at the lower energy intensity in developed markets, we use less oil as a fraction of our GDP, and higher incomes in emerging markets, they think the market can withstand Brent at 110 before we start to really get demand destruction. JPM has sort of pointed to that as well. It's oil is not the way it was seven right. years ago or in the 70s.
Yeah, that's a completely fair point. I keep pointing out that, you know, WTI was above 80 for 4 years from 2010 to 2014. It was a slow recovery. Didn't seem like a ton of demand destruction there, even though it was a pinch. And, yeah. The GDP of the world is bigger and incomes are high. So, I mean, that's a good news piece of it. It isn't necessarily something that you'd love to see, and it's palatable, and obviously you can overshoot. But it's working together with a lot of these other commodity moves.
Like, but in that period, Mike, I do think that there was probably a lot of production added from the Permian.
Absolutely.
In particular.
Yes.
Whereas right now, at least, we've yet to get there. I mean, there may be some smaller players who are devoting a bit of capital, but as we pointed out many times, yeah. Many of the biggest companies are certainly choosing to divert more capital to their ESG efforts and their carbon neutral efforts, if you want to call it that, and B, are returning it to shareholders.
For sure. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I almost wonder, you know, it's sort of one OPEC plus headline away from, you know, you having a little bit of a gut check for oil. I mean, because that seems to be where we are again, as opposed to just assuming that, you know, in North America, we're turning high-yield bonds into oil the way we were, yeah. You know, 10 years ago. It's not happening.
By the way, oil's on pace for 9 weekly gains, on pace for its best month since February. On the other side, nat gas is down 3 weeks.
Yeah.
We're in a bit of a shoulder season, but everyone's crossing their fingers that winter's not going to be too cold.
Right. And it is a lot more sensitive to the very, very real-time, you know, usage and storage and whatever else goes on. You know, there was a lot of attention paid last week to kind of a crash in Chinese thermal coal prices. And I wonder if people are starting to figure out, well, if China kind of set off this last phase of global energy rally because they were saying, telling people to buy up as much as they can and secure for the winter. So, yes, it's coal, it's not oil.
Yeah.
But anything that hints at their fall in China would also work against this rally as it is getting a little bit
China
stretched.
Is the marginal buyer. I mean, they have when it comes to LNG in particular, they are the reason in part that the Europeans are paying such incredibly mm-hmm. high prices.
Right.
They've increased their LNG imports by 28% annually for the last 6 years. And so the Chinese are one of the key reasons why natural gas prices, forget looking at it over here, really where it yeah. becomes even more of a story is Europe. We've talked about it. And if they were to have a very cold winter in Europe, that could be, almost cataclysmic in terms of what it's going to mean for their ability to provide power and a lot of other things,
yeah.
given the wind stopped blowing in the North Sea, apparently.
Right.
Which is an issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys, we got to get to the Trump SPAC day three here of trading. Digital World Acquisition Corp. Yep, this is SPAC on the street. DWAC, you can see it. It's up another 15%. I may have it halted right now. It's unclear. I got a little P in front of it, Mike. I think that means it might be might be halted for an imbalance. I mean, what can you say about this? Listen, you know, it's right now, there's not a company here that we're talking about. It's essentially a press release that was written about a company that will be formed, that will do all the things they're talking about in terms of providing a social media platform for sort of to the right and allowing others to bypass the likes of platforms that at least certainly many on that side say have not been fair. But there's nothing there. There was no pipe for this company, which we typically see. They did the deal, I think, almost only 47 or so days after it went public, which is a very short timeline to announce the transaction. There was no projections in the actual presentation. There was no call. You know, typically we might get a call. You may have heard about a number of hedge funds who made an enormous amount of money here because when this company went public, and this is something that's been going on in the SPAC market, the underwriters are lining up buyers of the IPO, particularly for those that they feel may be in some jeopardy of not getting sold. And those buyers, typically hedge funds, will buy as much as a guaranteed 9.9% purchase. They'll get a piece of the GP. They are getting warrants. They are also topping up the trust so that it's not just 10 bucks. It might be 10, 20. So essentially, from the hedge fund's perspective, you're protected. You're getting a small return. Remember the two-year time period. Typically, SPACs have to do a deal. Either you're going to get your money back by then or perhaps even sooner if you want to redeem on deal announcement. And there's always a chance that you're going to find gold. And that's what happened here. Many of those funds selling out with easily a 10-bagger in no time. Pretty incredible. And then it can become self-reinforcing. The fact that this company now is accorded a market value, pro forma, let's call it around $20 billion, if and when the deal is actually, when de-SPAC'd, let's call it around $20 billion. But right now you're still dealing with, what, 35 million or so shares, so you can move it a lot on a little. But it can create its own self-fulfilling prophecy because they're going to be able to sell stock at far higher prices to potentially fund a business model sure. that they're talking about in their presentation.
Absolutely. What is fascinating is it just had this furious ramp, you know, late last week to the point where I think wasn't the high in the 170s? I think it's already.
I've got a 175
yeah.
high, yeah.
So it's still just kind of, you know, finding its level. It's obviously, we were talking last week about how it had taken this, a little bit of the steam out of the traditional, so to speak, meme stocks, you know, which have been under pressure, AMC and GameStop.
175 was the high. But one thing it has done, Mike, is reinvigorated to a certain extent the SPAC market. You know, there was a period where we were saying it's mostly dead, but just like in The Princess Bride, it came back to life. Well, it has here, too. And even before we saw this deal announced, you had an increase in SPAC IPOs in October. I got some of the numbers for you. I mean, last week there were 14 new SPAC SPACs filed, 18 IPOs. October overall, 31 filings and 43 IPOs. So they're still coming.
Yeah.
And they're all still looking for deals, and they're all still hoping they can find something like this where, you know, you can just put down on paper your intent. Obviously, the Trump name has gone very far to create an enormous amount of short-term value. We'll see where things settle out, to your point.
And the hedge funds are doing this essentially perhaps just kind of seeding a lot of these deals.
Yes,
and
that's
just
exactly
saying
right.
Some of them are going to hit.
Some of them will hit, and if they don't, I really have very little downside. In fact, I might have a 2 to 3% annualized return, particularly when they top up the trust a little bit. So it's $10.20 or $10.30, not to mention the warrants and a piece of the GP. And then every so often you get hit because they announce a deal that the market loves. Obviously, that is the case here. It's early days. As I said, there's no business here as of yet. There's just the idea of them creating the business
exactly.
down the road.
See if they manage to do that.
But SPACs, we'll keep an eye on them because it is still alive and kicking a little bit more this week than or last week than it had been for a while.
Yeah.
A couple of reopening themes working today. One is IMAX, best October on record, as we continue to see some of these theatrical releases get some traction at the box office. The White House is expected to expand on the reopening of borders beginning November 8th to international travelers. On that point, watch the cruise lines. Citi today initiates both They would initiate Norwegian with a buy, and they cut Carnival to neutral. We see momentum building in the cruise industry, full fleet sailing by next summer, but especially for high-end brands, they say, Mike. Proprietary survey of consumers and cruise agents is also supportive. By the way, we're also looking for, there's a piece on NBC News today that the White House is going to work on expanding access to at-home COVID tests, which is something that would ostensibly make people more comfortable about travel.
Absolutely. I think all the kind of inputs are in the right direction right now. I did see some data on, the kayak searches for travel have also perked up a little bit. So it's working. The question is whether it translates market-wise, if that's really where people think there's going to be the big swing factor for outperformance. I mean, I think that, the cruise lines, the airlines have actually been pretty weak relative to, the Dow Transports have been on a great run. It has nothing to do with airlines, certainly not the cruises either. So it seems as if more of a commercial comeback story and services story. The cruise lines just raised too much capital probably at the highs. I mean, at the depths to necessarily make them big engines of comeback. But for consumer behavior, it's good news.
Yeah. You mentioned the transports, by the way, beating the Dow Jones overall for the last 3 months.
Yes. Still not, I think still working below the ultimate highs in the transports, but it's had a huge comeback. It's truckers and rails for the most part, and the logistics company, the carriers, UPS and FedEx.
Carl,
UPS.
On COVID, it is important to point out hospitalizations, I think, down, 52% from
almost
the September highs.
Yeah.
And testing, to your point, a very important component if you do, as hope and expected, we get the approval from molnupiravir from Merck. You have that antiviral available. Widespread testing, the ability to know if you've got the virus and therefore be able to treat it very quickly, is a key.
Yeah. And also, just given the general assumption that mostly we're done locking down. I mean, this doesn't seem like going into the winter that, it's better to have the at-home test to have another layer
sure.
of certainty.
By the way, we also got Moderna data this morning on kids 5 to 11, pretty much matching the numbers that we got out of Pfizer. I had to laugh at Weekend Update over the weekend on Saturday Night Live, where Colin Jost said on the mix and match, when's the last time you went to your doctor? And they said, mix and match. But that's sort of where we are.
Yeah, without a doubt.
We'll keep our eye on all of that, obviously. The other one, maybe some initiations on Warby. Goldman out with the buy, initiates. Cowen initiates, outperform. 72 target on from Goldman. High growth omnichannel brand with exposure to the structurally growing vision care market. I think I saw you looking at this earlier today, Mike.
What's that?
Yeah, I think I saw you looking at this earlier today, the Warby initiations.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's expensive. And that's, I think, that the first observation is it already builds in a lot of expectation for what the company's going to be able to do market-wise. Interesting little wrinkle of, big question as to whether we have vision care benefits and whether Warby Parker is going to have the partnerships to exploit those things. I did see, one of the initiations was, free cash flow is going to start to build once they get the physical stores open to a certain level starting in 2025. So I think that's what it is. It's like a great brand, disruptor, going to be taking market share for a long time to come. It's a good model, but super expensive. You got to decide if it's worth it at this level.
Right. So we opened the bell, and we were about 4 points from an all-time record close on the S&P, but we settled back 4 points. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Hey, Bob.
It's open really right near highs, but we've really flattened out in the last 5 minutes or so. Let's just take a look at the sectors. The key story is the market leaders for the month, which are banks and energy stocks, remain up there. Remember, oil's up around $84. Tech's holding in there. Semiconductors are pretty strong this morning. And once again, and this has happened all month, the defensive names, consumer staples and healthcare, have been on the weaker side. Consumer staples have had issues with the supply chains, of course. As for earnings season, we'll be halfway through on Friday, believe it or not. There's three major issues everyone's talking about. One, of course, is supply chain sentiment and whether or not those concerns have topped out or not, interestingly. Secondly, earnings growth flattening. We talked about that last week. And finally, the notable underperformance of some tech bellwethers on their reports last week. That's got people a little bit concerned right now. I just want to bring up what Kimberly Clark had to say, because this is one of those big consumer names that obviously has issues with higher prices and supply chain issues. This is what the CEO said this morning. Our earnings were negatively impacted by significant inflation and supply chain disruptions that increased our costs beyond what we anticipated. We are taking further action, including additional pricing and enhance cost management to mitigate those headwinds, as it's becoming clear they are not likely to be resolved quickly. So there's your inflation for longer story. That's been another sub-theme that we've seen. Kimberly Clark, believe it or not, the only company in the S&P 500 at a 52-week low today. Obviously, still an issue. But the important thing is we're seeing not dramatic earnings margins erosion overall. With some companies, obviously, it's a little bit of an issue, like Kimberly Clark. But overall, earnings margins are holding up pretty, pretty well. And that's one reason we're seeing the S&P hold up so well. If you look at, for example, sectors, consumer staples would be the most impacted by these supply concerns, some industrials as well. And yet, look at the market this week, this month. Obviously, banks have been doing better. Industrials have held up. Consumer staples are underperforming slightly, but not dramatically. So we're seeing some concerns in consumer staples, obviously, about pricing and margin erosion. But it's not dramatic, and it's not preventing the market from moving forward overall. Elsewhere, earnings flattening. I've said this many times. This is happening again this week. Today, we're having earnings estimates at 22.8% for the fourth quarter, and that's what matters, fourth quarter. It was 21% just a few weeks ago. That's pretty flat. Considering what's happened earlier in the year, where we had big increases as soon as earnings came out, this is now flattening out, and we need to see these numbers go up because the S&P is at a new high, essentially. You keep going up. You got to have some earnings power behind it. That divergence is a little bit of a problem for the market. The other big problem is the tech bellwethers that reported last week. I mean, my heavens, Snap, IBM, Intel's down 10% since the numbers came out. These are big, big companies. Snap's not so much, but IBM and Intel is. So obviously, everyone's a little bit concerned about whether tech will dramatically outperform during this earnings season. If that happens, of course, Carl, you're going to have a lot of companies having to make up with some dramatic announcements, particularly things like industrials and materials. We'll see what happens there halfway through on Friday. Carl, back to you.
All right, Bob, I got to get there first. Bob Pisani. Still to come, the parent of Burger King, Tim Hortons, and Popeyes out with quarterly results. Where do COVID supply chain issues and labor pressures fit into the picture? We'll talk to the CEO of Restaurant Brands. We mentioned a lot of the macro data that's headed our way. We'll get conference board, durables, but the big two are GDP Thursday and core PCE Friday, right now 10-year, just south of 163. We'll take a break. Back in a moment.
I wouldn't call that a wealth tax, but it would help get at capital gains, which are an extraordinarily large part of the incomes of the wealthiest individuals. And right now, escape taxation until they're realized, and often they're unrealized, and at death benefit from so-called step-up of basis. So it's not a wealth tax, but a tax on unrealized capital gains of exceptionally wealthy individuals.
On CNN yesterday, talking about her proposal to tax billionaires, it does sound, Mike, like that's one area where they're managing to get a little bit of agreement with the likes of at least Senator Manchin. And a lot of the reporting revolves around the idea that Democrats see this as being a long-term political winner.
A political winner and maybe a less organized opposition to it, because the corporate tax rate, it was considered a foregone conclusion. Like, I think the betting odds were like 75% a few months ago there was going to be a corporate tax increase. Now that's down to much lower than a 50-50 proposition, whereas it just seems like there's a lot of very narrow group, tremendous amount of wealth for all the logistical issues in estimating it. Maybe try it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Not a big lobbying group of 1,000 richest people
yeah,
in the country.
Exactly. Yeah.
That said, I'm still not quite sure how it works. It seems somewhat unworkable still, yeah. Since we have talked about this as a possibility for some
hard
time.
Numbers. And the aggregate revenue is probably not that much. You know, that's the whole thing.
I think they're thinking is it's not zero.
That's right. For sure.
We'll take a break. Some moderate losses here to start a Monday morning, down 28. Don't go away.
Truck wars are heating up, and it's not just about Ford's F-150 Lightning and Tesla. Phil LeBeau joins us with a look at Rivian's electric pickup and whether it lives up to the hype. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Mike, the R1T is a vehicle that a lot of people have been looking at and saying, wow, what's this going to be all about? RJ Scaringe's Rivian company, which has filed for an IPO, has quietly begun deliveries of the R1T. Now, they've got almost 50,000 of these that have been ordered so far. We had a chance to drive it last week here in Chicago, and it delivers the performance that they said that they were going to give us, which we'll talk about the specifications in just a little bit. It starts at $67,500, but when you look at the R1T, keep in mind, this is really the beginning of what will be a slew of electric trucks that are going to be coming out over the next couple of years. And this electric truck battle, you've got the R1T from Rivian, the F-150 Lightning, with those deliveries starting early next year, maybe the first half of next year. We put in the Hummer SUT because while it's not a traditional pickup truck, it is a truck. It does have a bed there. Those deliveries start later this year. And then, of course, the Tesla Cybertruck, and we expect those deliveries late next year. As for the specifications on the R1T from Rivian, 800 plus horsepower, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, with a range of 315 miles. And while we don't show it here, guys, there is this pull-out camp feature where you can basically pull out a grill and cook with it. It's one of the cooler features on the vehicle. Take a look at shares of Tesla, GM, and Ford. We can't show you our Rivian because Rivian's IPO has not happened yet. We expect that a little bit later on this year. And, of course, Tesla moving higher, guys, because of that note from Adam Jonas and Morgan Stanley raising the price target to $1,200. Guys, back to you.
All right, Phil, thanks so much. That's our Phil LeBeau. When we come back, Roger McNamee on all things Facebook as the Dow is wavering between gains and losses. By the way, Tesla has just surpassed Facebook to become the fifth largest company in the U.S.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.